This is Sunday Profile. I'm Richard Adie. My guest today is a journalist, a local politician, a public advocate for gay marriage, and she's the Prime Minister's sister. Christine Forster is a Liberal councillor at the University of Sydney, and the only one with a national profile. That's because of two things that are intrinsic to her. She's Tony Abbott's younger sister, and she's gay. Christine Forster's always known about the first. The second took a bit more working out. She grew up Catholic, married in her 20s, had four children, did the usual school drop-off and pick-up. And it was through school, through preschool actually, that she met Virginia Edwards, the woman she now lives with and wants to marry. As you know, this week a private member's bill on marriage equality was introduced to the Parliament. This follows Ireland's vote last month amending its constitution to recognise same-sex marriage. There's clearly something in the air. Christine Forster, welcome to Sunday Profile.
Thanks for having me.
How optimistic are you that the law will change?
I'm actually very optimistic. Australia's been going through a process. It's been a slow process. But I am actually now, we've come to a point where I'm very optimistic that the law will change. And I think it will be this year. I don't think that it's an issue that any of the major parties, either of the major parties, want to have kicking around in an election year. Certainly, I don't think the Liberal Party would want to have it kicking around in an election year. I think it's in everyone's interests for this to be addressed this year. And hopefully we get the right result and the law does change and we can all get on with our lives.
And you think, so the Prime Minister, you believe, will allow a conscience vote in the Liberal Party?
Look.
What, in the spring?
Well, August is what people are talking about, and that's because this session of Parliament is really all about getting budget measures through, and rightly so. When they come back to Parliament, this period towards the end of the year is the best time probably to get this talked about within the Liberal Party, to get a good bipartisan piece of legislation before Parliament. And then we have a vote and fingers crossed the numbers go our way. I mean, it is still looking, and I don't crunch the numbers, but I talk to people who do crunch the numbers, and it's still very, very close from what I'm told as to how the numbers will fall when this comes to a vote, assuming everybody's voting with their conscience.
That's interesting, because that means that, say the Prime Minister, your brother, changed his mind, said, actually, I'm not going to worry about the budget, we'll do it now. If he allowed a conscience vote now, and I think Labor's already said they will, would the bill get through?
Unfortunately, probably not, from what I'm told. People that genuinely want this reform and that aren't just playing politics with it don't want to push it through right now because possibly the numbers aren't quite there in Parliament yet. So it's better for it to be held back a little bit. There's a very important decision coming out of the US later this month, the Supreme Court, which will probably decide it's looking like that decision will go in favour of marriage equality. That will be another indicator that, most, Western democracies are moving towards this reform. And, that hopefully will bring a few more of our Australian politicians along to acceptance or resignation or wherever they need to get to support this. Everyone's impatient for the change, but a couple more months at the end of the day will probably be to the advantage of the yes cause.
So where is your brother, the Prime Minister, on this? Because he said in the past, I think marriage is between a man and a woman.
He's still there. That's where he is. That's his position.
You'll have been getting in his ear.
Well, he knows my position. He knows that I disagree with him. But, of course, I get in his ear to the extent that he knows that I'm out and about talking about this issue. And when I see him, sometimes it gets raised, sometimes it doesn't. But his position is that it is between a man and a woman, and I respect his view on that. There are always going to be people in Australia that will believe that marriage is, as it's defined and solemnised by governments, is man and a woman. But, that the world's actually moved on from there now.
He's actually in a more conflicted position than you are on this, because you want to get married. This is something you feel with all your heart.
Yes.
He doesn't agree, but he loves you and he wants you to be happy.
Well, he does. I'm his sister, and you know, we're family and we love each other. And I know that he only wants a good outcome for me and for my life to be happy and fulfilled. Yes, I guess he might be conflicted at that level, but his view will not change about, you know, what is the definition of marriage. But certainly, as we go along in this process, you know, he has, like all other politicians, all other people, has seen the result in Ireland, the referendum in Ireland, and I guess my view is that result really signalled to anyone who was sort of fighting against this change that the tide can't be turned back. This is, you know, when you have a country like Ireland, you know, traditionally a very conservative, very religious country, really voting overwhelmingly, resoundingly in favour of marriage equality, it sends a pretty strong signal that you can't turn the tide back.
So this is for the Prime Minister. It's a matter of sort of accepting the realities.
Tony's a very good politician and a very intelligent man. And I don't want to put words into his mouth, but I assume that he has looked, as we all have, looked at the Irish result and thought, well, gosh, if Ireland can do it, then how do you fight that here?
So where's the rest of your family on this issue? Because I think two of the Prime Minister's daughters have publicly supported marriage equality.
Yep.
What about your parents?
Look, my parents wouldn't support marriage equality. My father's turning 92 and my mother's has just turned 82. I think that their view is the traditional one. In fact, I heard from my mother this week and she expressed that view. And so that's their position. You know, they're of a generation that I suppose takes a more traditional view of marriage. That said, I have plenty of people of their age and you know, their vintage say to me how much they're in favour of marriage equality. So there's a range of views on this.
And if the law is changed, the Prime Minister will come to the wedding.
He has said that. I haven't asked him lately, but he has said that in the past. And, of course, he'll be invited. He's pretty busy. I don't know. We have to slip it into his diary on a convenient day, but when he's not jetting around the world to meet, you know, other leaders of heads of state. But yes, certainly he'll be invited, and it would be fantastic if he's able to be there. Yeah.
You haven't got a date yet, have you?
No.
It's a bit preemptive.
Yeah.
What is it like being the Prime Minister's sister most of the time?
I don't think about it most of the time, to be honest. I go about my daily life and I really don't think about it.
I know it's not the core of your identity, but it's just that more than most, he is a divisive politician. And some people, you know, there's a spectrum of people who respond to him who loathe him.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. I think Tony's always polarised people. You know, there are people that absolutely love him, and there are, you know, obviously people that just can't get where he's coming from.
Beyond that, probably.
Yeah, well, beyond that. But you know, for myself personally, he's my brother. I know who he is. I know the man that he is. I absolutely respect and admire him as a person. You know, very much so. He is a terrifically decent and good fellow. And I know that in everything that he does, he has the best interests of the country at heart.
Well, I suppose that's why I'm curious, because, look, I'm one of five. I've got four sisters.
Oh, poor you.
I know that if I knew that somebody bore them antipathy and they didn't even really know them, I would hate that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Look, and blood is thicker than water. You know, I talk with one of my sisters a lot, and she, for instance, when the leadership spill was happening in February, you know, she's still on media blackout because she just couldn't bear to hear the bad stuff that was being talked about our brother, about Tony. And she feels that very personally. I don't. I try and take a view that, you know, it's all politics. I know that Tony has a very thick skin, and he can hack it. So if he can hack it, for heaven's sake, I can hack it.
He said before, though, you know, the politicians, you choose it, but the people you love, they...
Yeah, they get dumped in it. Well, and look, I suppose that, you know, I'm now in the position where, you know, I'm a very small-scale politician myself. You know, I'm elected to the City of Sydney Council, so I've put myself in a position where I'm a, you know, small, very small-scale public figure. So, you know, I take the same attitude. You know, you're out there, you've got to cop the good and the bad. You've got to have a thick skin. And so, you know, and I know that he has exactly that attitude. He's been in politics for, you know, 20 years, 30 years. And I know that he can hack it, so I don't get upset about it.
On Sunday Profile, I'm Richard Adie, and my guest is Christine Forster. She's been much in the public eye because she's an advocate for marriage equality. She's the first to admit she has a vested interest there. And she's the sister of the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott. She's also, as you mentioned, a Sydney City Council, and I will ask you about that shortly, Christine. But I'm interested in your growing up. What was your childhood like?
Look, we had a what I would regard as being the sort of idyllic suburban Australian childhood. We lived in Chatswood when I was very young, and then moved to Killara, so we're on the North Shore. It was, you know, playing in the bush, bare feet, you know, just everybody's kind of, you know, regular, usual Australian childhood. It was very happy. I feel blessed that our family was comfortable financially, you know, and I had a very relaxed and I look back on those days and it's kind of, you know, with a rosy glow of those perfect days of childhood.
And was politics something that was talked about? Was it a...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, look, we did. I mean, I think, yeah, my family, my father and my mother, both very engaged in you know, current affairs, both very intelligent people and who thought about the world around them and discussed that with their children. So, you know, we did have very engaged and lively discussions around the dinner table, and we you know, it was the traditional family idea of sitting down at the dinner table every night and having a meal together. And, you know, there was myself and my two sisters and my brother and my parents, and everybody would engage in lively discussion about, you know, whatever had been going on within everybody's lives during the day and in the broader sense with, you know, what was happening in the country and in politics and in current affairs.
Was your brother treated differently? Because it's been reported, you know, that your parents always thought, you know, he's a star. He's going to be a star.
Well, I can assure you that his sisters never thought that.
I can attest, there's nothing like sisters for bringing one down to perspective.
We never regarded him as a star. But, look, I suppose he was the oldest. He's the oldest. And so he was, you know, there's Tony and then there was Jane and Pip and myself in the family. So he was the oldest child. He was a boy.
Pope or Prime Minister as
well.
Well,
look, yeah, that's that, yeah, that famous line of my mother's. The thing about Tony is if he was treated differently, it was probably because he was different in the sense that, you know, he has always been very driven, very hardworking, very dedicated. And he, you know, wanted to make a mark in the world.
From how old?
Well, look, I'm 6 years younger than he is. So, you know, I guess my first understanding of this was probably when he was in high school. By then, you know, as a teenager, he was already, you know, charting his own course and deciding what he wanted to do with himself. I would guess that you don't get to be the Prime Minister of any country unless you're pretty driven and hardworking and dedicated and committed. And he was like that he's always been like that as long as I've known him, which is all my life.
So when did you get interested in politics? Because you said it's fairly recent becoming a local politician, but you've always been, well, you've been interested a long time.
Yeah, well, look, I was involved in student politics when I was at Sydney Uni. I was elected to the SRC. Contemporaries of mine were Anthony Albanese and Belinda Neal.
You would have been on opposing sides.
Yeah, I wasn't a young liberal, but I was on the conservative side of politics. I I actually ran with a very dear friend of mine who unfortunately was killed in a car accident, and I kind of lost interest after that. Because you know we were a team, and when he was killed, tragically killed, I lost interest. Got more interested in my social life at university, having fun, which is big part of the reason that you go to university. And so finished my degree and wasn't involved in politics at that point. And then went overseas and travelled got into life and career and what have you. I started getting interested again in politics. I've got four children and when my fourth child was born and had sort of started getting going to school, and I was a bit freer in terms of thinking about myself now, where do I want to go, what do I want to do. I then started to turn my thoughts to local government. Unfortunately, also at that time, my kind of personal life was unraveling. It was a period of my life that I had to make some very difficult decisions about myself and my family, and so I wasn't able to actually go into politics then. But it was something that I was working towards, and here I am.
Here you are.
Yeah.
So actually, because you met the man who would become your husband, got engaged very quickly. I think you were only 23.
Yeah, I was 22 actually when I got married.
Mm. Wow. And you had no inkling, or did you have any inkling at that stage, that you were a lesbian?
It's a question I've been asked a lot over the last couple of years. All throughout my life, I have been strongly attracted to women and have had very close relationships with women. In my mind, when I was younger, it wasn't something that I acted upon. It was just there. I knew that I was very strongly attracted to women, that I formed very close emotional bonds with women. But it really wasn't something that I thought about in a sort of a frontal lobe sense that, okay, I can live a lifestyle whereby, I'm in close, intimate relationships with women. It just wasn't part of the life picture that I had been given and that I had for myself. So,
there was no kind of longing or tension. It was just, it just almost didn't occur to you. Is that what you say?
Yeah, in a way, yes. And without wanting to be, too openly revealing about it, I mean, probably the fact that most of the women that I had very, very close and intense relationships with, none of them were lesbians. So, it didn't, nothing ever...
Nothing came up.
...developed, yeah, so to speak. And that was just sheer fluke. I mean, if I had met and it formed a close attachment with somebody who was a lesbian when I was say 18, 19 or whatever, probably my life would have taken a very different course. But that didn't happen.
So when you met Virginia,
yep,
you didn't think, oh, a lesbian. It wasn't like that.
No, of course not. No, it wasn't at all. I mean, when I met Virginia, I thought, what a beautiful person. I was immediately attracted to her. I thought, isn't she fantastic? And we became friends. But no, I didn't think, oh gosh, here's a lesbian that I've met. So the course of my life, it hasn't turned out like that. But at the end of the day, I came to a realization about myself and, gosh, these close bonds and close relationships and the attraction that I have for other women is what it is.
That must have led to some mixed feelings at the time.
Terrible. I mean, I was married. To come to that realization when I was married was very traumatic. It was because it left me having to make terrible decisions about my own future and my ex-husband's future and my children's future, my family's future. I had to make some terribly big decisions about how I was going to chart my course, and that, of course, had dreadful ripple effects for everybody in my life, and it was extremely difficult.
How were your parents?
My parents were shocked. Everybody was. I mean, I was shocked in a sense that, you know, it kind of hit me like a train. Okay, well, I can't live as a straight person any longer. I can't remain in my marriage any longer. And I'd been married for 20 years. And, you know, in a good, very good, happy marriage. But I couldn't, I, you know, it was a shock to me when I, you know, sort of came to the full realization that this is what this means. It was a shock to my parents. It was a shock to all of my family, because they had seen outwardly me happily married, four beautiful children, living a perfect life.
Mm.
And it was a terrific life. And I had to turn all that on its head. It was very hard. It's hard for everybody.
Yeah. Mm. And are you still Catholic?
Well, I'm cat. I don't know that you can sort of cast that off.
You're not allowed to Catholic. Leave. You're not. They don't let you leave.
Once a Catholic, always a Catholic. Yes, I regard myself as Catholic. I chose to send my children to Catholic schools, and I love the Catholic ethos of being a person for other people. It's very much part of what I believe that, you know, we're not just here. We're not put here we don't exist just to be selfish beings. We exist to give something back to our world and our communities, and that's a very Catholic kind of ethos.
It is. These days, of course, you have a different life. No longer on the North Shore of Sydney. Instead, you and your partner live in Surrey Hills.
Beautiful Surrey Hills,
inner Sydney. And you're a city councillor.
Yep.
Why did you finally say, actually, I'm going to get involved in local politics?
Well, I suppose over the last 20 years since I've been back in Australia, I mean, I've increasingly been involved in organisations that are community-based, and that brought me into the sphere of kind of local government. And making a difference in your own local community was something that I've, over a period of time, increasingly got involved with. So local government to me was a natural step, you know, and I have a political bent. That's probably in my DNA. And I was able to think, okay, well, I'm in my 40s. Where would I like to take the rest of my life? And I think many people do this in their 40s. They sort of take a breath, sit back and think, okay, where's the rest of my life going to go? And local government for me was a natural fit. To be honest, I was lucky in as much as an opportunity came up in the city of Sydney. And if you want to be in local government, the city of Sydney is probably the best local government in Australia to be in. And so when the opportunity came up for me to stand, I jumped in, threw my hat in the ring, not knowing what would happen. And luckily I was pre-selected and then got elected, which was a terrific thing.
And it could be a launching pad. I mean, and your kids, as you said, are growing up. Have you thought about Macquarie Street or Canberra?
I did actually stand for pre-selection for the state upper house in the prior to the last election, because politics, as I say, it's kind of in my DNA, and I would like to be a full-time politician. I make no bones about it. That would be my goal.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
Christine Forster is a Liberal councillor for the City of Sydney. If you want to listen again or you've got something to say about the interview, go to the website at abc.net.au/radionational. The program is produced by Mudita Diaz. I'm Richard Adie. Next week, I'll be talking to the former football coach, the most famous former football coach in the country, Mick Malthouse. Hope you'll join me for that.